So can you say your name and spell it, please?
It's Anthony Daly, or Tony Daly, whichever. I'm never quite sure which one I use, whenever. It's Anthony, A-N-T-H-O-N-Y, D-A-L-E-Y, or T-O-N-Y, D-A-L-E-Y.
And what year was you born?
I was born in 1960.
And where did you live in the Leighton area?
I lived at number 66 Colville Road.
And when did you kind of move in?
I think it was probably 1987, is what I remember anyway, when I think about it. Yeah, 87, sometime in the summer.
And did you, like, have to submit an application to ACME?
Yes, I did. I submitted sometime, maybe 2 or 3 years before that in... I think everyone did when they left art school, really. I think as soon as I left art school in 84, 85, I submitted to ACME. Yeah.
And did they interview you, or what was
it? Did they interview... I remember going to see them, yes, I did. I went to interview, for an interview. I think I was accepted to some degree, obviously.
And what art school did you go to?
I left Chelsea at the time, doing the MA in painting.
Okay. So, when you... arrived down to Leighton to look at the house they'd offered you.
Yeah.
What was your first impression?
My first impression? I guess I wasn't really expecting very much. Just expecting somewhere to live, somewhere semi-derelict or somehow somewhere cheap. And it seemed a nice enough street, nice trees, tree-lined street with them, nice sort of... houses, so seems okay.
And where did you live before you moved to Colville Road? Like, where was you coming from?
I was living in Camberwell in a association house. We squatted at first when I first left art school with some friends, and we became a council tenant, and it was got a bit nasty there, so I wanted to move.
Okay. Yeah. And what sort of, like, when you looked at your house, what sort of condition was it in?
It just looked like semi-Victorian terrace house with just the normal things, really, just windows and doors and nothing special. I wasn't expecting that much.
Did you have to do any work on it or anything?
Did I have to work on it? I'm not sure if I actually ever painted it, actually, even the front. I think I ever needed to. Inside was quite different, though. There was lots of... it was quite intact inside, but there was lots of dry rot on one wall. So I knocked one... I returned the plasterwork back to brickwork in one room. And that's all I ever did, I think, in terms... I was going to fix it, to re-plaster it and stuff, but I never got around to it over the years. So I lived with one room just with bricks, and I think I just... sealed it so it wasn't dusty, and lived like that for all the time there.
Okay, so did you, like, the room that you took the plaster off, was that your studio or storage space, or what did you use that for?
I never really worked there, I just lived there. I worked in Greenwich, in a studio, I had a big studio in Greenwich, so I just used them, I used it at my house for living in, basically. So that was actually my bedroom in the end, over the years.
So you had a whole house to yourself, did you?
Initially I did. I did move in with a friend from Camberwell. We were living together in Camberwell, and I didn't really tell Acme much about it, but just a friend of mine came to share it with me, really. And I took the downstairs room, and he had one of the upstairs room, and I used them. One of the rooms for storage, and two storage rooms. And then eventually I met, because it was so cheap, when I met friends who had no way to live, but they could come and stay with me for a while, and that's how I used the house, really.
Okay, so that must have been quite nice, having people come and go.
Yeah, people came and went. Lots of different people came and went, actually. First of all, Edmund came with me from Camberwell. He was like... We actually moved into the squat together in Camberwell, in Cambry Mansions. And we both moved into the house initially, and he stayed for maybe 5 years, for 4 or 5 years. They went off to France, and then I actually met a couple of young ladies on the tube going to Leighton one night, and they wanted somewhere to stay. They're students, and I let them stay initially. They stayed, and they just stayed and stayed. And when, as I said before, when friends, I met friends who had nowhere to stay, because it wasn't like a palace. It wasn't like someone trying to rent out to somebody. It wasn't like, I kept it quite low standard, because I never really worked on it. So it was always just people who were willing to stay somewhere cheap and relatively lowly kept, really. Mm. And then let them stay for as long as they wanted somewhere to stay.
And the guy you mentioned, was he a painter as well?
No, Edmund wasn't. I think he did a history or English or something in Leicester.
Okay. So, were there anybody in the street that kind of, like, local people that you got to know? Or?
Yeah, I think I was okay, quite good at, not mixing, sounds like a really funny word, but, I mean, it became quite a community.
Mm.
Leighton, that street, it's like a real community in lots of ways. And I met my next door neighbours on both sides. There's one on my right, was 68, I think it was. There was Tommy and his dad, his Irish dad, and you couldn't actually understand a word Tommy's dad said. Just really thick, smoke-filled Irish accent, and very strong. And his 9-year-old son, who used to come to the house regularly, and you know, I used to find him in my bed, lying asleep sometimes. Yeah, just really, you know, it's quite friendly kid. So, it's just, and I knew Tom. I wonder what he's up to. I actually talking about him recently. Actually, I hear that he's a trader in the city.
Oh.
Yeah, so good for Tommy.
Because you mentioned the children, because there was a little gang of children that would go up and down
the street.
And they'd go in and out of people's houses.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sheila, one of the mums, used to say that she, was quite happy with that because she knew everyone in the street and she knew that everyone would be trustworthy.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I don't think that would be possible.
I don't know.
Especially as you said you found the little boy in your bed.
I tell that story quite a lot, actually, about Tommy in my bed. I think the next door neighbour on the other side, 64, yeah. I think Tommy found two guys in a gay act. And they said they were wrestling to cover up for what they were doing. He walked in the house. Tommy walked in on them, and I've been told since, and caught them. And I don't know what Tommy thought of me, but he came into my bed and I was lying there expecting me to, I don't know what. And I was a bit, because I'm not gay, I'm not a paedophile or anything like that. So, I've always liked children. I always play with children. I just, one of those things I've always done. And I'd play with all the children in the street, and Tommy was like, because his father wasn't particularly connected with him, really, I suppose. He was just like free to wander a lot, and I looked after him, really, when I could, just entertained him.
Yeah. And any other people in the street that stand out in your mind?
I'm still with quite good friends with them. People I know. My next door neighbour, who was living number 64, he was an economist. He was at the London School of Economics. Steph, he now lives near me now in West Norwood, where he lives, and he actually pays for the studio most of it.
Yeah.
Because he's done really well in business, and he buys my work now, and he sponsors my studio most of it. So still, my closest friend, really, one of my closest friends now, I met there next door. And all the people that live there with him, they've all become bankers and stuff, and they buy my work. I sell work to people in Denmark who used to live next door in a semi-squat in Culver Road.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you ever go to the Northcote pub or anything?
Northcote. Who else have I seen? Am I still in touch with? Actually, recently, about 6 months ago, I bumped into Jack Jeffries.
Okay.
Yeah, she used to live down Culver Road as well. Now she's living one street away from me in Forest Hill.
Oh.
And we're kids at the same school together, and we all meet up. We're all friends now.
Oh,
Did I go to the Northcote? Yes, I did. It was obviously the local pub when I. It's the only place I actually socialised in Leighton, because I did most of my living in Greenwich or where my friends lived over in Notting Hill. And I'd come back late at night and go to the Northcote for a drink, or I'd go there quite regularly. My friend, the guys from next door, we all used to go and watch, you know, did we watch football or do we? Yeah, we used to go to watch sports and stuff, and sometimes get quite piddled, I think. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you sort of seem to sort of spend more time away from Culverer than you use actually. In it, partly because of your studio, I guess.
Yeah. Of course, because I didn't work there, and I tend to use it basically for, I had very little there, I just had one, I mean, I actually tried to reduce my life there to one table, one chair and one bed, and my books and stuff. And I did most of my existence in Greenwich in the studios, and then I'd go off to Cross London, really, various parts of London to do to meet friends for other things and parties, whatever I did. So I mean, you know, obviously I lived there, so I can't say I didn't spend much time there, because I did.
Yeah.
And I spent the weekends, whatever. I used to work 7 days a week in those days, so it's
did
like
you?
Yeah.
Because I remember you had a lot of shows in the go, actually.
Yeah. I was very lucky when I left. I left Chelsea Art School. And I had already had Angela Flowers dealing with my work. So I had that kind of outlet. So I just worked to supply that, really. Just showed with her. I showed all around the country, around the world, basically, for that time, over that time.
So you was obviously selling your work then and earning income.
Yeah, I did buy, you know, many, started at the time, but, you know, before the Brit art gang, you know, I was doing quite well. Okay, I showed a lot of work, never stopped showing. I remember thinking all that from 80, when I left art school in 84, 83, I don't think I had 2 weeks spell when I wasn't showing something somewhere, some piece of work somewhere, or show somewhere. So, I just kept showing. Mm. And I got bored of it, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
When did you start to get kind of bored of it all?
Bored is the wrong word. I just felt, I think when I was a student, when I was at Wimbledon doing the first degree, I had this vision that I wasn't going to expect to have lots of shows, and I thought I'd struggle to get a gallery, and I thought my plan was to leave college, get a part-time job, get a studio somewhere and work for 10 years without even showing anything particularly. That was my plan, and the way I was going to cope anyway. But because I got the galleries quite soon and showing work all the time, I just felt I was never really in control.
Okay.
I was producing work just one after the next, producing more and more work. A lot of it was crap, I thought. I started thinking, and just, you know, just felt out of control, and I just felt I wanted to just stop.
Yeah.
Stop producing work for Angela Flowers Gallery, and have a space where I can actually think about what I was doing, which is what I really wanted in the first instance. To really think about it, produce work that I thought more about, and because I also worked 7 days a week, 10 hours a day most time. I just did it and just kept going, and I just work, go and party, go to Private View, you know, and then go home and crash out and up again the next day, and didn't really do much living really, and I think I just burnt out, really. Just completely burnt out. 94, 93, just got tired. Really just got tired. Tired of the work, tired of the gallery, tired of how I was living.
God, that's amazing, because a lot of people would love to be able to do all those shows and be that successful, but I suppose what you're talking about is the reality of it all, really.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, the thing is now, I mean, I don't do as much show now, and I don't have the same ability, the chances to do it now, and I look back and I think, God, I would much prefer to have been where I was than I am now. You know, I could still bring up Angela Flowers and talk to them if I wanted to, but I just, when I left Colville Road and left, I just stopped talking to people, really. I stopped talking to the gallery and stopped talking to people. I just focused on building up a family life, really.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So there must have been that, you know, that change in your life of a family. And
yeah. I decided I wanted to have children at some point. I looked at my work, I looked at the life, and I thought, well, you know, it shouldn't be one or the other. But when I actually started having children, I found it really incredibly intense, and I kind of put all the energy into that. And I still worked, but I just didn't go around. I didn't have the same network. I just dropped the network, the artistic art network, and just focused on the children until they're of, you know, school age.
It's really interesting hearing that from a guy, actually, because I think, you know, it is a real issue about children, because there is this sort of attitude that, you know, if you're an artist, somehow you don't have children, your focus is totally on the work.
Yeah.
And a lot of women have been in that situation, but it's really interesting hearing it from...
I had this vision of this me, you know, carrying on living in Leighton, living cheaply as the initial thing was to try and live as cheaply as possible so I can put all my energy into the painting, you know. That was my initial sort of second thought once I got working and showing work and stuff. And I found myself this vision. I wasn't getting rich, really, you know. I wasn't getting particularly wealthy. I was just making enough money to keep working and to be able to socialise to some degree. And and I sort of visualised myself, you know, what, being 40 or being 50 and having children and stuff, and I'm thinking, is it really worth it? And I didn't see as incompatible having children and making art. I didn't at all. And I wanted to have children. I wanted to have a proper relationship, not just flirting around with gallery girls, which is what I used to do. No, you know. Well, I did. I mean, I had so many relationships with all the gallery girls around London, you know, just a bit silly, really. You know, every gallery girl, smile, you know. And that's how I lived, and it just got a bit boring. Yeah.
And you said you spent a lot of time up in Notting Hill. What was you doing up there?
Was that in Notting Hill? Straight across the Central Line. Missed out the tacky West End. It's quite a nice, social, mature, young life at the time. It's better, you know, they had nicer places to go and drink and eat. And interesting young, sort of, slowly females, really, I guess. To put it bluntly. I don't know. Nice young ladies and nice young men. My friends lived over there, and so crashed out and parted and drank and, well, flirted, all the stuff young men did, I suppose, over there.
And what sort of work was he producing at the time?
I left art school painting still lives, but very, very loose. Found objects with a bit of interest, nothing specific of meaning, of any sort of powerful meaning to me or anything, but I'd collect junk, look at a Picasso or a Matisse painting and work around that and formulate the ideas around the junk and the paintings I liked at the time, and made these very sort of very large, very loose, related, almost like landscapes out of these still lives, really. There's one central object I used at the time when it was a chandelier, which I found in Chelsea. I used to make a kind of social thing with it. It's like almost like a political thing. I used to find nice things in nice areas, bring it back to Leighton, and almost like treasure them and use them in the artwork, and yeah, use them in the paintings, really. And I did that, and I painted these sort of really large, vast still lives of, which are really abstracty, landscapey pictures, really colourful pictures, and didn't look like anything really at the end of the day. So, yeah.
What sort of painters did you like? Were you looking at them?
I even use Matisse's images in the background of the pictures. I'd put a chandelier in front of a Matisse painting, for a poster. So I'd use all that lovely reds and colours he would have in his back of it, in his paintings, and use it as a backdrop in my own pictures. And I, used them. I liked Rembrandt, so I used to, and Turner, and I still work generally in the same area anyway after all this time. So nothing's really changed in that way that much.
So, what galleries? You've mentioned Angela Flowers.
Yeah.
Where else was you showing? Was you in the Whitechapel Open or anything?
I don't know what it was about Angela Flowers' artists. We never really enter things, it seemed. They show the work regularly. They put it out into sort of provincial museums and provincial galleries. Nottingham, Trent, Winchester, Ipswich, all over really. They put the work out, and they seem to build up that kind of network, and they should put the work in museums and galleries around the country, provincial ones, a lot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So they were kind of in a way, touring your work.
They would tour it in their own way, yeah. They would do that basically in their own way. All the gallery artists would have shows in various places together or separately. I had a big one-man show in Wigan and through Angela Flowers and in various places like that, really. There wasn't that need to having to get the work out as such. Maybe I should have done. I did enter the Whitechapel Open maybe twice or once, yeah. I think. I did it once. Because I always forget to, really, to be honest. I'd think I'm going to do it. I'm going to enter the John Moores, and when the time came, I never actually got around to it. I was too busy worrying about my pictures to actually enter something. So I entered the Whitechapel once. I got something in Whitechapel Open once. I never entered even the John Moores ever. Even now, I haven't entered it. I keep thinking about it, but I never get around to doing it.
Yeah.
I never actually entered anything really. I just produced the work, showed up flowers, or people who came almost from knowing them, really.
Okay. Yeah. So you ended up in one of Eddie Chambers' shows, didn't you? How did that come about?
With Eddie, I did quite a few shows with Eddie Chambers and stuff, because I did initially, because of the black connection, really, the sort of a West Indian connection, they did various stuff to do with West Indies, or I don't know what, African diaspora kind of art thing, and I can't remember what it was about, but I did get involved with Eddie Chambers. I was quite dubious about all the kind of what I thought at the time was quite juvenile politics about the flags and and racism and stuff. I thought it was really boring, not worthy really. It was quite juvenile at the time, I thought so anyway. So I never really got involved with what they did, but I did show some work with him. I think he saw my work in a gallery in one of Angela Flowers' sort of initiated shows somewhere. I think it might have been in Manchester or something.
Oh, okay. And so then he wrote to you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a case of knowing people as well. I mean, I knew Frank Bowling quite well, and so I think Frank Bowling may even have spoken to him about me and stuff. I mean, I knew Eddie Chambers on his gang. I knew what they were doing. So, yeah.
Mm. I mean, looking back, do you still see that work as you saw it then?
What work?
You mentioned what Eddie was doing and so forth. Or do you see it in a different light now?
Do I see it in a different light? No, I think all those people's work have changed, I think, generally speaking. I think they probably matured out of it. I was not the kind of person that would, I don't like victimizing, and I don't like feeling like being a victim, and I wouldn't want to, I wouldn't want, say, the British people now to be feeling guilty for slavery, and I wouldn't make work about it, because, or anything like that, because, things happen, people, societies change, views change, people did things in the past that, you know, they probably wouldn't do now. And it's, you know, it's quite nice to hang on to if you need to, but, you know, my work wasn't really about that. And I wouldn't want to condemn or to patronise or to look down on anybody because they did some different kind of work from me. Mm. I think they're probably, Eddie Chambers, Keith Pipe and all that gang, they probably found comfort in the group thing they had, or strength or comfort or whatever they may have found in it. But I wasn't... you know, I actually remember once when I first left Chelsea, I went to the Battersea Arts Centre because I was living in Battersea then. I went and asked them if I could have a show at some point. And the lady almost literally led me by the hand, you know, just not to give me, not to show me the gallery, but to show me this gang of people that was in the cafe downstairs with all the Eddie Chambers gang. And Keith Pipe was almost to try and introduce me to them as if that's what her role was. And I remember thinking, God, you know, I didn't come here to meet friends or to meet, you know, I came to have a show to discuss having a show at some point in the future. So, you know, and I find it really quite strange, patronising almost, really. So, yeah, I met the guys, I said hello, shook hands and wished them luck with their work. And I think that's all I ever did until when I showed with that group of people for several shows. You know, I didn't get involved still with a political thing. I showed a nice... abstractive painting, which I did.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so mainly you was with flowers, so you didn't really need to do any of the open shows, and presumably you didn't do an open studio because your work was elsewhere, wasn't it, in a warehouse. But did you do any open studios where in your warehouse?
In my studio, I did all the open studios in Greenwich, where my studio was with Greenwich Artist. Did all those open studios there. Was there an open studio in Leighton? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was the Leighton Artist Group, and they linked it up with the Whitechapel, so they had, like, the maps came from the Whitechapel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
East London.
No, I never got involved with that. Left it.
Yeah.
Yeah, never did.
And just like, I suppose also your work now, because you mentioned that you felt like your work hadn't changed or was similar in a way.
Yeah, the basic interest is still the same. This sheer sort of reveling in paint and colour and stuff, you know, what paint does on canvas, is still the same. Imagery is almost like the same starting point, really, but it's more reduced now to more of an abstract-y appearance.
Mm.
There's very little of any kind of initial objects or starting point left at the end of the pictures. That might be changing soon because I imagine getting. I don't like to make flat paintings, so I think it's gone as flat as it's going to go. So I'm trying to work out ways of reversing the flatness without becoming too literal about objects and stuff. Or about people.
And so, like, where do you show your work now?
Now? Jesus. I rarely show these days.
Oh, okay.
I show here in open studios. I had a show in a cafe down the road recently. In my local calf, just for a laugh. And Angela Flowers still shows some stuff. And my last show with them was in 2002. So it's not too long ago, really.
No.
But, we still talk about things, but I haven't felt the work's gone really quite well enough to really start pushing it again. It's not, for me, I think because I used to work such long hours, the kind of flow you get, and the level of flow you get from that, I find it very hard to replicate that now in the kind of time I have. So I never feel really strong enough about the work, and I never feel it's strong enough to start putting in museums again. I'm not saying it won't happen again, but for the time being, I'm just quite happy to just produce the work and sell the work privately to friends or people I know or whoever comes along and wants to buy it. And That's how I survive now.
So you're still, in a way, supporting yourself through your work.
Yeah.
So that's really good, isn't it? And I wanted to go back to Leighton and ask you if you had any involvement in the public inquiries in the No M11 campaign. Because you left quite late, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you was there when all that was going on.
Yeah, I left in 94, October 94 I left Leighton. I did go to one or two town hall meetings and where people shouted across the room at the people on the stage, and I found that quite futile. I actually accepted from a personal point of view that when I moved into Colville Road, I knew I was going to be there temporarily in a short life house, which is going to be knocked down at some point, and there was nothing to protest about. I accepted that, and it wasn't really an issue. And I felt quite sorry for the families that grew up there and lived there, you know, Sheila and the kids and stuff. I felt for them the sense of powerlessness, having to be pushed around by local government or by whoever. And me, to some degree, when the actual time came, the push actually came, I felt quite powerless. I couldn't have stopped it if I wanted to. I didn't particularly want to stop it, but I felt I couldn't stop it anyway. So there was that degree of sense of powerlessness, but I was accepting of the fact that I did move in it, knowing that would happen, and there was nothing to protest about from my point of view, really. So, I mean, I saw all those young kids came, or, you know, all the stereotypical protesters with all the dreadlocks and the stuff come along, you know, and I think they probably had fun. Mm-hmm. But it was meant to be knocked down from when I moved in anyway, so I wasn't going to fight a futile fight, personally.
Like about the other issue that was going on at the time was the poll tax.
The poll tax, yeah. Yeah, it relates, not because they didn't want to pay it, but it did relate to that issue. The one issue I had was that issue of powerlessness. And I thought, well, you know, this is the local government is supposed to be protecting the community from hostility, really. And really, what the M11 sort of situation was, well, it was really a hostile attack on the people who live there, and it felt like giving them money, putting money in their hand from my pocket or from my hand to theirs, was in some way supporting what they were doing, what the government was doing, the local government, and knocking the houses and moving people around, making people feeling, you know, just dumb, you know, change people's life with, you know, involuntarily. So I kind of, that was my protest, really. I just didn't want to support it. I wanted the government to fail at the time. I wanted not to be supporting it, you know, in financially, and I just withheld my payment to them. Just didn't want to pay. I felt a bit like the turkey at Christmas sharpening the axe, you know? And I didn't want to be part of that. I didn't want to be willingly and handing over money to people who were, well, it's kind of scheming, really, or whose job it was to destroy the lifestyle I was living. You know, that's not what I thought government was worth for, so I just thought, well, at least I can do is just not pay them. With that,
yeah, when you didn't pay,
they sent me letters. I ignored them. They sent me bailiff letters. I ignored it. I just put them in the bin. I did send a few back saying, "Why should I pay you money to push me out of my home?" You know, not that I knew that, you know, but I did say that. I sent them letters back saying, "Why should I pay you, keep you in your job, when it's your job to persecute me and my community?" So I didn't pay. That's all I did. My protest was that. And they actually chased me 10 years later, I think, where I was living in Camberwell, and sent another demand for money, and I still didn't pay it. So I did pay my taxes in Camberwell when I was living there. So it's not that I'm not. It's not that I'm a, tax dodger. I just didn't agree with, I just didn't want to, sort of feed the axe man, so to speak.
The last few years that you was in Colville Road, did any of the road protesters move into the Colville Road houses?
I'm not absolutely certain of that. I did see there were a few, there were some sort of, I think there were German students or sort of people of student age, with all the sort of, dreadlocks and stuff, on the unwashed appearance, living. They moved into, I think they were, building up the protest group.
And did you ever go down Claremont Road?
What for? I'm sure I did at some point.
And see what was happening down there.
No, I was busy elsewhere.
So, did you, I mean, you must have known what was going on, though, there.
Probably not, actually. What happened?
did you see what they'd done to the street at all?
What did they do?
And
What did I miss?
put netting across the roofs and so forth.
No, I didn't. No. I don't think I did anyway. No. Now, I knew things was happening. I knew people were protesting. I knew there's like a kind of a group activity going on, but I didn't get involved in it because I, as I said, I was painting in Greenwich and drinking in Notting Hill or wherever in Chelsea and chasing life.
And I suppose you never went to Leytonstone on the underground. So was you always going out west?
I could probably count on my fingers the amount of times I actually went further than Leyton. Yeah. In all the years I lived there.
So any of those times, was that when did you go at all to Leytonstone in about 93, 94?
I must have done it. I walked up there or got on the tube there for.
So if you got the tube, did you see anything from Claremont Road from the tube that had the street had changed?
No, I can't remember anything. I wasn't aware of anything anyway. I wasn't really aware.
And what was sort of, I think you said you left in 94, wasn't it?
I think so, yes.
And what were the sort of circumstances in which you left?
Not totally happy. The time had come when I had to leave. ACME told me I had to leave. There was some compensation. I was actually behind in the rent at with ACME. I felt really bad about that, but I just somehow just bad timing for financially, and I was being burgled a lot, and I was burgled about four times in the same year. Yeah, by I don't know who. And I got a little bit stressed by that, and I just kind of lost interest in the house, really. And I remember I actually what compensation I got from the whoever it was, London, what did it?
It came from Department of
Transport,
Transport, ACME.
Yeah, that went straight to ACME. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I've signed it off over to them so I can pay off most of what I owed them. I think I owed them about £2,000 and I paid up 1,500 of it and some more. And I think I still owe them money actually, which I feel really bad about. But it's all a bit a long time ago now, really.
You know, you said you had a spate of burglaries.
Yeah.
Can you remember kind of what year that was going on?
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but the last year I was there. No, actually, when I first moved in, was I burgled? I was burgled once initially, in the first couple of years, I think. Then once again, maybe 2 years. Yeah, actually, when new people moved in, twice, over the years I was there, got burgled the same day, the same evening when somebody moved in. All their stuff got stolen. And near the end, I was burgled maybe four times in that 1 year.
Mm.
I think some kid just bored.
But there was some, it was reported in the newspaper that there was a whole spate of burglaries down Colville Road.
Yeah.
Around that time. So
I didn't read the newspaper.
People were saying how sort of, you know, the area was becoming more and more run down and more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And people started to feel more vulnerable as it got closer and closer to
yeah. kind of, I did actually feel a degree of vulnerability. I felt, yeah, powerlessness really to some degree. Even though the bigger picture, the overall, the bigger imagery of, you know, I knew it was coming to an end, and I knew from the start when I got there, when I moved there, it wasn't going to be forever. And whether I used it to the best of my ability, I'm not sure. Other people made more of it than I did. You know, people bought houses nearby or whatever, and I didn't do that. I left Colville Road to go and live in America.
Okay.
I went to live in America because I wanted to travel, so I decided to go put all my work in storage and went to America for a year and 2 years. In Switzerland for 6 months and came back 2 years later.
And where did you come back to in London? What part of London did you?
I actually came back to London and lived in a place which is actually about a stone's throw from where I've moved from in Camberwell when I went to live in Leighton. I went back to where to Camberwell, same virtually the same street.
Yeah.
And I moved back to Camberwell until pregnancy. Then we moved to Forest Hill.
And can you remember any of those sort of like amusing things that you did when you lived in Leighton?
Oh gosh. I don't know. This. I mean, if somebody told me something, and I could recount. I mean, I think I quite like. I mean, practical jokes and playing games and stuff. And I would do things. I'm quite vocal. I mean, I remember carols singing. I remember messing about the trains and stuff, and you know, pretending to interview people on the trains and stuff, and.
Or pretending to
interview people on a train, or.
Yeah. What did you have the audio equipment and everything?
Well, nothing. Just
no,
a little bit maybe. Or, you know. Actually, one of the funniest things I remember, actually, so I remember sitting on a train going to Leighton, and I saw two very slow young ladies going, and I went over to them and said, "Excuse me, are you going the wrong way?" And you know what? They were. they just literally got the central line to them going the wrong direction. Yeah, it's funny, but, you know, living, things happen, do things, silly things.
Do you still kind of do your sort of jokey performances?
Yes, I do. My partner keeps telling me off, so I'm beginning to rein in my behaviour a little bit. My kids are a bit embarrassed as well sometimes, so I tend to be kind of controlled by that a bit. But yeah, I'm still playful.
Do you remember pretending to be the ticket collector late at night at Leighton Station and collect, and people started giving you money?
I can honestly say this, most time when I went to Leighton, I'd been drinking. You know, I'd been to a party, I'd been to Notting Hill or Chelsea somewhere for a drink or to a party, you know, a dinner party or something, and come back. And yeah, and I did pranks. I several times stood there when there's no ticket collectors and collected tickets from people for a laugh. Yeah, because I thought they'd think I was a ticket collector. Yeah.
And I suppose really the last question is, do you think that when you look back at that period in time and all those artists that lived together along that between Leighton staying, because it was quite a big area of artists, a lot of artists. Do you reckon that could ever happen again?
First of all, what did I make of living there with all the artists? I had memories of it, actually. I guess because I was just out of art school, really, when I moved there, and I was quite excited by the idea. And I moved into Leighton with that being part of the reason for it, to, you know, to work with lots of artists nearby and to, you know, to work in an artistic community. And that's why I did it. One of the reasons I moved to Leighton, apart from the fact that it was cheap. I did try, you know, artistic friends, you know, made friends with people there, and especially in the street. I met Julian Perry, and he was one of my close friends in that street, amongst many others. Jack Jeffries, who I still know now, and Julian, and Sally. I remember actually once, I did try a lot actually to get the galleries to go and see the people there as well I knew. And I remember one occasion Richard Pomeroy. That's his name, isn't it? Richard Pomeroy. He was starting a gallery up somewhere in West End, and he asked me if I knew any artists, and I'd arranged. I said yes, a lot of people living in the street in Culver Road or around the area, and I'd arrange a meeting so you can see lots of people. And I went round and knocked on people's doors, and I got a really strange reception from almost everybody I spoke to, saying, well, they kind of said, you know, almost, I say, are you for real? You know, is this for real? Is it really going to happen? You know, it's like the real doubt. And almost they proved that you can have a gallery person come in to see us. And I remember thinking, God, is this really necessary? And I thought, well, no, and I forgot about it, I just left it. I phoned up Pomeroy and said nobody's really interested, and I just left it because everyone's just so doubting me.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I thought, well, is this really necessary? So, he came to my studio and saw my work, and that was it. That's what I did in the end.
And your studio was
in Greenwich,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. The question again was.
Do you think that the idea of all these artists living together in that area in this sort of creative environment, do you think it could happen again?
Yeah, like a massive creative hub. Is it necessary? I don't think necessarily true, because I think the idea of moving to an artistic ghetto where there's not much money is a bit of a silly idea. You know, it just becomes quite depressing, really. I mean, that was one of the problems with Leighton. We'd all go to the pub and nobody had any money, and I don't know how many people actually worked full time, produced lots of work and stuff. I don't know. You know, and it was that step for most people I knew. There was that step from college. You know, it was that from college into the professional life. You know, and. I don't know how well it worked for anybody. I don't think it would have worked for me if I just worked in Colville Road as well and lived in there and just focused on that area. Now, where we're working now in Deptford, there is very much that kind of artistic hub again happening. It's just almost like transported to Deptford. There's not artists everywhere. There's tons of studios down the street. There's just one street and across the road as well, all in the area. And moving through as well from here through Broccoli, Forest Hill, tremendously large amount of artists working, successful artists as well working. So it is a kind of natural hub as well. It's become a bit like that. But we weren't all put here because it was like, you know, short life housing and stuff. It's different. So, yeah.
So, why is everybody... sort of all the artists sort of come to this area, do you think?
Space and money. It was cheaper. And, space was cheap here. When we moved here, this building, I think, we paid, I think, 400,000, I think, if not less, or 300,000 for it. Now it's worth millions. This one building here, where the studios are.
Oh, okay, so everyone's bought this studio.
Yeah, we bought this studio. You know, the Greenwich Studios I used to work at when I was living in Leighton. And when I came back from America, I went back to work there again. And then, just like the short life, that studio came to end as well. We got kicked out by Greenwich Council for redevelopment. And that sense of powerlessness again overcame the group working there. And we thought we'll try to find a space where we wish we shall not be moved, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what this place is called, Artists in Perpetuity Trust.
Yeah.
For that reason, because it means we shall not be moved from here, unless we want to be moved. And so we worked together, got money together, and bought this building. And it's a charity, so nobody actually knows. Even though we all own the building, individually we own nothing. So we're just like ordinary tenants, really. So it's okay. It works. Cheaper studios, and it feels more permanent than the other studios in the area. And it's quite a nice position to be in. They're not great studios, not as big as I'd like them to be, but can't really afford anymore these days, unless you're really successful. So, I mean, David Mack worked here for a while, and he's got his nice big studio somewhere else, and